The Postcast, brought to you by Boyle Sports. Experience an epic Cheltenham on the Boyle Sports app with extra places and exclusive offers every day of the Cheltenham Festival. Boyle Sports, this is betting.
Hello and welcome to the Racing Post Postcast, 7th of March. In association with Boyle Sports, we will be looking back on quite a packed weekend of action. Not the most high-profile racing, of course, because we've got a fairly major week's racing coming up that you may have heard of. It's the Cheltenham Festival next week, and I'll be discussing that a little bit later with my two guests. I've got the Racing Post's Mark Boylan with me, and Leon Blanche from Boyle Sports is also with us to keep us straight on all betting-related matters. I'm sitting in for Maddie Plyle today, I'm afraid. She's not feeling terribly well. She caught a bit of a cold over the weekend, and she's got to rest her voice so that when we get to Cheltenham next week, she'll be able to roar home those winners. So we're going to start by looking back on Saturday's action. We had some excellent racing, actually, at Kelso. Also good racing at Doncaster and Newbury that would traditionally have held the focus, but Kelso has been building up its card over a period of years. Some quite good quality racing there, considering this is that sort of phony period in advance of the spring festivals when the really major stables aren't running their best horses. And the ITV cameras were north of the border. And it turned out to be very much a day for backing northern-based horses. The big race, the Moor Battle Hurdle, worth more than £50,000 to the winner. Sort of prize money, you know, you might hope for if you were going to a major festival. Won by Cormier, who will have the chance to win £100,000 bonus for his connections if he manages to win a festival race on top of that success next week. Mark, what did you make of that? Cormier, he's not been around all that long, but he's already given connections some big days.
Very much so, Chris, and real improver as well in the grand scheme of things, considering where he's came from initially. Like the way he went about it, as the form of the race, I'd have to be a little bit lukewarm in some senses, given we've missed out four hurdles, I think. It does change the dynamic of the race somewhat. I thought this fella won better than the winning margin, though. He's a length and a half, he's won by at the line, but I thought he won with a little bit more up his sleeve than that suggested. And he went up four for winning the last day, you know, for previous to that at Cheltenham. I know in Britain, maybe we've well documented about the handicap and rises over there. I'm interested to see what he come out with after this. But regardless, connections are well entitled to go and have a crack at something at Cheltenham. You know, whether he goes county hurdle or something along those lines. I mean, there's 100,000 reasons to have a go. And the Shunter last year we saw, even if somewhat unorthodox with him going from here to win the plate at Cheltenham, it can be done. And it's one of those races that I really, anybody that has a bit of initiative to have a crack at going on here. I know it's far from ideal, maybe in some circumstances, depending on what horse you have, to try and back up Cheltenham in a reasonably short space of time. But I liked what I saw from this fella. Overall, I said he had a slight reservation about how strong the form was, but he'd be a live outsider in the county or something like that. I wouldn't rule him out.
Leon, he gets, I think, a £5 penalty in the county hurdle now. What do you think? Does that make him a live contender?
Look, I mean, it's hard, as Mark has alluded to, Chris, very hard to back it up straight away. However, he deserves his place in the lineup, and Brian Ellison is no mug. He'll have him spot on again. He's in the Coral and he's in the County Hurdle, but I would suggest it's more than likely that he would go to County, having won over course and distance in January. He's 14-1 from 20-1. The word I would use for Cormier is consistent. And I think this performance by him was consistent once again, where some of his main rivals probably didn't fire. But the one thing you can say about him is he's running to a very consistent level and he's improving. He's only a six-year-old. It was a good ride by Sean Quinlan. But look, he's in there. He's in with a squeak. And as Mark alluded to, €100,000 of a bonus. Why not go for it? But again, great prize money at Kelso, £50,000. There's some serious handicap hurdles over in the UK, not alone just at the Cheltenham Festival. And it beggars belief to me sometimes why we don't see more horses going for these big prizes.
Absolutely. This is the second Saturday in a row when you had a really valuable handicap and you know, quite a sort of beatable looking size of field. Listen, Leon, Cormier always makes me think of that day back at Catterick in August 2020 when he won his for the first time. he was in handicaps on a low rating. I think he'd been with a different stable. He hadn't joined Brian Ellison long before. And he was absolutely hammered. And I think in the they had the discipline to save it for the last half hour before the race, 22 to 1 down to starting price of 100 to 30. Does he give you nightmares because of that day, this horse? Or did that pass you by?
In fairness, at a race in Catterick, I suppose it wouldn't take that much to bring it down all that. However, it was a well-executed gamble. I mean, he had a couple of runs at Catterick, didn't he? Thinking back to all that time ago, I think he was a winner twice and he was second. But look, he's a horse that has improved immensely. Got to give a lot of credit to Brian Ellison. And certainly, if he lines up at Cheltenham, which I think he will, why wouldn't you go for it? Even if he was to run a big race and finish in the money, they haven't really lost anything in defeat. It's going to be difficult. He's obviously gone up another £5, but I think he's worth his place in the lineup.
Mark, there are some significant horses in behind Cormier. Bouverdere, maybe the most notable name. 11 years old now. He's back from a long absence. What did you make of his performance?
Yeah, I know Nicky Henderson had put the warning signs out there prior to it that he was going to come on for the run. You know, I would have been surprised if he didn't say something like that in advance. Would like to have seen a little bit more, but look, it, you got the impression all along that Aintree was going to be this fella's big target. I think that'll be a more accurate reflection of whether there's enough there to kick on for another while longer. But regardless, he's been an absolute dinger for Connections. Like, I mean, still, you know, I have a soft spot for him, but find it hard to park with cash at this stage of his career. Wouldn't use this totally as a stick to beat him with. Would just have liked to see a little bit more.
Yeah, you know, I suppose at this stage, it's just great that he's, you know, in a position to be racing again after, you know, he's had a, you know, couple of knocks. He was the one, wasn't he, in the fighting fifth, he got a bit of the hurdle lodged in his hoof, which was just...
Exactly, yeah.
Which was really odd and scary little injury, but he hasn't won for 3 years. But it's great that he's back competing, and it would be good if he could find something more the next time. Would you make of Métier? He was quite a disappointing favourite in the end.
Yeah, he's hot and cold for me. You know, overall, the form of the Tolworth last season, I was sceptical. Sceptical come out of it, even more sceptical after seeing the run, the Supreme, for all that he didn't run to form. Like, when he's good, he's very good. We saw that at Lingfield, but you know, he can throw in the odd stinker here and there. I know it wasn't a run totally devoid of some promise, but, you know, the way the race turned out, perhaps, you know, with hurdles taken out, it didn't exactly play to his strengths in an overall tactical sense, but, you know, he's not a horse now that if I had had to really make one call for a horse to get me out of trouble, I don't think I'd be ringing Metier's number. He's a little bit hit and miss for me.
Yeah, fair enough. Yes, of course, they did take out the two hurdles in the home straight right before the Moor battle, if I remember correctly. You know, it's for a lot of sort of casual spectators, it's a very frustrating thing, you know. I see people on Twitter moaning about how it should be called the Moor Battle Bumper. That's not quite fair. And, you know, in the end, I'm not sure it has actually affected the result. I think you'd have got the same winner anyway. But it was just it was a typical sort of Scottish weather, wasn't it? You know, there was enough dazzling sun to make them think it was a good idea to bypass those hurdles. And then as you saw them hammering in the signs to bypass, big cloud cover came over the top and, you know, that section of the course was plunged back into darkness. So, you know, you think, well, if they could have hung on for even another half a minute, maybe it would have been okay. Does that bother you guys when this happens?
I suppose it's a very hard call to make. Safety has to come first. It has to take priority over anything else. And I suppose if there's any kind of reservations about them jumping them, well, then they've got to go. So I wouldn't want to be in that position to have to make that call because no one likes to see it. It happens quite regularly. And we're just praying that the sun doesn't come out because it's a jumps game. And that's what we want to see. We want to see horses jump. But unfortunately, from time to time, for safety reasons, they just have to be taken.
Mark, is that how you see it?
Pretty much. Like, I mean, I don't find it satisfactory overall in terms of, you know, you have a race there where you have a horse that puts emphasis on jumping. You have another horse maybe that has a flat background. You know, it can shape the way I view a race. But at the same time, I complain when I'm driving into sun in the car and I'm pulling down the visor and I'm thinking, geez, it won't even cover what I need to see. You know, look, it's not a straightforward call. But I do think it feels, and I could be totally wrong, it feels anecdotally like it's happening more often nowadays than it did before. Perhaps, you know, there are times where, you know, if you could pinpoint tracks, maybe they're already doing this, where you pinpoint where certain races have caused an issue in the past and go back and try and kind of think of the time of year that, you know, could you maybe start at a different point? But ultimately, you're still going to have to take hurdles out if it is an issue. So, you know, barring they come up with some, I'm amazed down through the years that, you know, all these easy fix hurdles we've made, all these plastic hurdles, padded hurdles, everything that has been made, but there's still nothing that you can make to fan out the sun. There's very, very little. If someone could ever design a technique and that, I'm sure the Dragon's Den pitch from the Jockey Club in Ark would be pretty high.
I know that Aintree have put a lot of thought and even expense into researching that subject, but, you know, without really being able to come up with a solution. But yeah, there's money in it for whoever does. Okay, so also on the Kelso card, Nuts Well, good old Nuts Well, won again. He scored in the Premier Chase, which is a listed contest, odds of 18-1. Leon, punters find it hard to catch this guy right. He's a regular winner, but not when he's short price.
Yeah, look, he is a regular winner, Chris. I think he's won over now 270,000 worth of prize money. He's a horse of a lifetime. Huge success for Brian Hughes and Anne Hamilton, winning that Premier Chase. But I think probably looking at it from a like perspective of a favourite, Espoir de Rome, he was very disappointing, Chris. I mean, he's rated 160. I don't think he ran anywhere near to that. You would be a little bit disappointed with his performance. I'm sure Kim Bailey and David Bass will look back at it, but he just never really picked up when he was trying to chase down Nuts Well. Even Hill 16, you've got to give that horse a bit of credit too. Made a little bit of a mistake at the last where he wasn't fluent. Don't know whether it would have changed the result. He was beaten a length. I thought Nuts Well was full value for the victory. But the horse I kind of took out of it from a disappointment was the favourite. Never really ran up to his rating whatsoever.
You know, that was actually disappointing for me personally, because like you, I was looking at those ratings and thinking, you know, this guy is so well in. Actually, 5-4 isn't bad. I mean, it was his first run since Halloween, and that might have been, you know, he might be able to do better again the next day. But it wasn't the most encouraging of performances, I thought. Mark, what did you make of this race?
Really like the winner. Like, I mean, as a likeable horse, you know, there are some of these horses down through the years in the north that you'd kind of latch on to, and not necessarily from a punting point of view, but, you know, I had no financial interest in the race at the weekend, and I was very, very happy to see him come out on top. You know, he's a tough old bugger when he's in the mood, isn't he? Like, 13-time winner, but it's another illustration of the amazing year the Hamiltons are having. You know, and really, just obviously, I've never doubted them personally, but you get a very warm feeling for that outfit and what they're doing this season. So, you know, Brian Hughes, I thought he was absolutely top notch here, as he has been throughout the whole campaign. But again, when the money is down and when you really, really need to count them chips on the line at the last, you know, I always find that, you know, it's very rare you see him meeting it on a wrong stride. Very rare you see him, you know, making a horse do something that isn't probably in the best calculations at the time. And I thought it was a really, really enjoyable race. Same as yourselves. Espoir de Rome, disappointing. Going to give him maybe the benefit of the doubt, considering the layoff. But overall, he might just be a horse that falls between two stools somewhat. Do I think he's a 160 horse? Genuinely, no. But, you know, maybe he could have a crack at a handicap off a few pounds lower. But just he might be between that middle tier of not quite being good enough for the top and maybe a little bit high for handicaps. But look, time on his side still, I suppose.
I tell you what, for a horse that's got a rating like that, he doesn't have much of a public profile, does he? Maybe that's our fault. But yeah, I mean, Anne Hamilton, absolutely amazing. Just looking at her stats, 12 wins for the season from 28 runners, a 43% strike rate.
Magic.
Imagine sustaining that from May through to the beginning of March, and over 200 grand in prize money. So it's not as though she's just taking on the easy to win races. Just extraordinary stuff. And she'll have a chance of sorts in the Champion Hurdle next week with Tommy's Oscar. Windsor Avenue was in the Premier Chase. You've got a Grand National entry, but Brian Allison specifically doubted that that might be the race for him after this. He reckons he's a horse who, in light of the great Yorkshire win the other day, he likes to get his own way in front, and that's, you know, evidently not very likely to happen in a race like the Grand National. So we move on. Earlier on the card, there was the Premier Novice Hurdle, won last year by My Drogo. Mark, tell me, Nell's son won this in a driving finish at big odds. Do you see a big future for that one?
Don't know if we have another My Drogo, but he is a very, very nice horse. And if there's a man to get the most out of a horse like this in terms of natural long-term progression, it's Nicky Richards. Really, really like the way he brings on his horses, not rushed, you know, and a testament to that is when you see horses like Taking Risk and Simply Ned, etc., in recent seasons, still pulling out of the bag in big, big races, big weights, wherever it might be. So, you know, even if this horse's immediate future, there might be others next season that are better than him. I've no doubt he's in the right hands to make his mark going forward. He seems very, very intent on a chasing campaign. And, you know, Sean O'Keefe, who, you know, Irish racing followers will be very, very familiar with this stage, having really, really come on leaps and bounds in the last couple of seasons. It's not that he didn't make a good impression early on, but riding for some of the top stables around here, William Mullins has called him plenty of times in the big graded races when either Paul has been out or when there's been a second or third rider required or a jockey gone elsewhere. And, you know, he's really, really impressed. Jessica Harrington, obviously, at Link-Up has worked really well in this season. And to pick up a spare like this over there, Nicky mentioned to him that he'd have the option of maybe getting back on him again at Leopardstown next Christmas. And, you know, just as an aside, Nicky is a trainer to come over and have a go at the Irish. Like, there's only a handful of trainers from Britain that have had a go at the Dublin Racing Festival. Nicky has been very, very strong in supporting it. And, you know, he has been rewarded when he's come to Ireland. He's been rewarded coming here for the Christmas Festival. As a trainer, he's got his eyes and ears open with a view to prize money that's out there. And this horse, I'm sure he'll be campaigning pretty astutely. I think there's others out there. He's won this while rated 126, a grade two. So you'd have to kind of question whether it's the strength of the race overall. But I do think he's a lovely long-term prospect. I'd probably expect if he did go to entry or something like that, he'd bump into one or two sexier types. But for the future, lovely, lovely sort.
Very good. And that was the race in which Alan King's North Lodge, he got done on the line. That was the closest the South came to getting a winner on the entire Kelso card. I think there were three Scottish train winners. Nicky Richards, obviously, with two from Cumbria, the Hamiltons in Northumberland. And actually, Cornia...
You're not rubbing that in.
I'm just trying to stop myself from singing the anthem. Cormier from North Yorkshire was actually the closest thing there was to a Southern winner on the card. Leon, I appreciate, you know, Kelso is not one of our most high profile race courses, but I mean, does a card like that set punters alight? You know, was it a reasonable betting day considering its position in the calendar?
Oh, absolutely. Look, once it's a Saturday, once it's on terrestrial television, you're going to get plenty of interest. North Lodge is a horse, Chris, however, I think was a little shade unlucky here. And he'd be the one I take out of this race more so than the winner. I thought he'd done a lot of work. He was chasing Richmond Lake, who, of course, fell at the last for Donald McCain. And look, he just got done. But I think North Lodge, I think we might see him in Aintree. And he's only a five-year-old. So I think Alan King has got a nice prospect on his hands. But back to your original point, yeah, look, Kelso, there was good interest in it. Once it's on a Saturday, and as I said, once it's on terrestrial television, Chris, you're always going to get plenty of interest.
I tell you what, Alan King's yard had just gone a little bit quiet, but a couple of winners lately, as well as North Lodge running so well there. So it might be worth looking out for anything they're running over the coming weeks. So that was Kelso. Good card at Donnie as well. You know, as long as we're thinking about Grand National types, there's the Grimthorpe was the feature race on that card, where you do sometimes get one or two horses that are sort of warming up for Aintree. Under supervision prevailed in a driving finish over Mr. Malarkey, who seems to have rediscovered a bit of form. Mark, what did you make of this finish? I thought, to be honest, the winner was maybe a tiny bit lucky that our interference rules are drafted the way they are.
Yeah, I think Sam Justin Davis held his hands up pretty soon afterwards and said he could have been better in that regard. Like, he's got the job done, big race. But yeah, like, if you are Mr. Malarkey, I think probably the winner still would have won. But, you know, in our rules, they don't really tend to give the benefit of the doubt in that scenario to the runner-up. So, yeah, look, at the winner is going forward. He is on the up, I suppose. He's still six. So to win a race like this at that age, there's a lot of horses who are still running in bumpers at six. I wouldn't knock him in that regard. I have him more on my mind for a Bet365 Gold Cup or a Scottish National. I think maybe the Scottish National is where they're leaning, and Twist and Davis know how to operate around there. Look, at a nice performance. I didn't think it was the deepest race in the world. Mr. Malarkey is one of those that has been kind of bordering on Cliff Horse territory for me without quite being Cliff Horse territory, and I was encouraged to see him show more for Richard Bandy here. Maybe there's a little bit life left in him again. He's still nine, I suppose. It's not like, feels like he's been around for longer, to be quite honest. But I give the winner an each way a chance in something like a Scottish National or a Bet365 Gold Cup. But I wouldn't maybe be screaming from the rooftops with him as the best win proposition.
I mean, he's still a young horse, isn't he? He's only six, I guess. He's got, you know, better days ahead. But I really would. I mean, I like Sam as a jockey, but I really would have liked to see him make a bit more effort to keep his horse off the runner-up in the closing stages. You know, of course, you understand why he doesn't do it, because the only punishment for naught is a 3-day suspension. You know, which he won't have to serve for a couple of weeks, and I suppose it might rule him out of the Midlands National. But in the meantime, he's got this race won, and it prevented the second horse from running on. He probably wasn't going to anyway. I guess he was a spent force, but it would have been nice to know. Anyway, Mark, while I'm talking to you, what did you make of Cloth Cap's effort? I mean, obviously, he's, you know, could be Grand National bound again. Do you see any encouragement?
It wasn't a run that would have me knocking him out of the equation necessarily, but it's more his run in last year's National that would leave me questioning greater as to whether he's a genuine contender for that race. Particularly as we've seen as well, without having my green, white and gold cap on here, it's a race that in recent seasons has been dominated by Irish trained horses. I'm not necessarily sure at this stage of his career as to whether he is necessarily bang there for an entry type performance. I'd like to see a little bit more again, but wouldn't use it as a stick to beat him with fully. He's still going to come on from this. You get the feeling that the whole year is geared around Aintree. He's number 44 on the list for the National as well, you know, so with average luck he's going to get in, and he's going to have, you know, a reasonable chance of showing up well if he brings his best form. But I'm not so sure at this stage of his career. He's 10 now. There'll be other more attractive types to me in the National.
You know, I just wondered if maybe a bit of better ground at Sandown, slightly sort of lower quality of race, might suit him. But he has jumped the wrong way when he's faced a right-handed track sometimes. Leon, what would you be taking out of the Grimthorpe?
I wouldn't be taking Cloth Cap out. No, it's pulled up last year. I take Mark's point in terms of saying maybe the whole season has been geared around Aintree, but he probably will get in. He only needs four to come out. But I was a little bit taken with under supervision in terms of he looked as if he was going to win a lot more comfortable. Sam was very patient on him. I take your point about maybe Sam could have corrected him a lot earlier after jumping the last when he definitely went left. But I still was taken by that performance. I think there is a good bit of improvement in him. He's only a six-year-old. And I think a Scottish National, yeah, I can see why maybe looking at something like that. But I think he was more valuable than the winning margin. I think this under supervision, Sam wasn't overly hard on him, got the job done, but I thought there was a little bit more left in the tank. So interesting to see where he lines up next.
Yeah, and also in that race was Storm Control. One or two people may know I've had my struggles with this particular horse, trying to catch him right and pulled up on this day. I think just the ground was a bit testing for him, but he's still not too harshly handicapped. He needs to land in the right race, but you always have that worry about what you're going to get from him in the finish. So that was the Grimthorpe. Oh, earlier on the card at Doncaster, Bundoran's won a handicap chase, his first success since 2019. Leon, did you see that coming?
Well, look, I mean, he wasn't a huge price. What did he return? I think something around the 5-1, 11-2 mark. So,
wasn't he?
Yeah, look, and, you know, like for like an 11-year-old, he jumped extremely well for Kieran Gethings. I think the second horse, King D'Argent, probably bar that mistake at the last, he might have won for Dan Skelton and David England. But Bundoran, another one of these horses that would have a bit of a following because of his longevity. And isn't it just great to see horses who've gone past the 10 and 11-year-old mark still getting their head in front and still loving the game? And I think a lot of credit obviously has to go to the whole team down at Tom George's for keeping these older horses interested, for keeping them sweet, because it is what drives a lot of fans to follow National Hunt Racing, because we get the opportunity to watch these horses year after year after year. So congratulations to all of them. But in King D'Argent, I do think he was a little bit unlucky. He's a 7-year-old. And I think he's still capable of winning plenty of handicaps.
Yeah, I think Dan Skelton had a couple of near misses on that card. Tom George, though, is having quite a good season, 30 winners now, which is already more than he's had in the last couple of years. Mark, what did you make of that success for Bundoran?
Pretty much echo what Leon has said, to be honest. He's really, really toughed it out very well. And I enjoy seeing a performance like this. Do I think he could show up well potentially in something like a Red Rum at Aintree? There's an outside chance he could. I'm not sure whether he'd get into the Grand Annual. That would make more sense as a target for me. But overall, he's probably going to be vulnerable to one or two. But it's an example maybe of, not to be harping back to it, but you know, the handicapper has given some of these older horses a real chance this season. Like last season, he was wrapping up off a mark of 145. Prior to that, he ran last year's Grand Annual off a mark of 150, and back down here to 131. Like, he's been dropping really, really through the weights. The runner up has been given a chance too, I suppose. But yeah, look at it. It's good to see these horses going and collecting when they are given a chance to do so by the handicapper.
Yeah, well, and it's an incentive, isn't it, to keep going with some of these older horses in the hope that you just get far enough down the way so you can pick up something again. So earlier there was a listed race for Mayor's hurdle race won by Fonzarelli for the Rebecca Menzies yard that is having a really good season. And, you know, appeals to me, Leon, as, you know, possibly still an underrated yard, you know, punching above its weight.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a few of them this season, which is great to see, Chris. A lot of these kind of stables, you need publicity, you need a winner, and you need to get winners on big days, because potential owners are probably only looking in around the weekends. So it's huge for a stable like Rebecca's to get a winner on a Saturday, to get a winner on TV like at Doncaster. It was a good performance by Fonzarelli. I think, in fairness, I just wonder how good of a race it was, because Fonzarelli was off 109. So I'd have my reservations about the quality of this listed contest. Get a Tonic was another kind of second for Team Skelton. Hung Left, which probably cost it its chance of maybe winning the race. It was only beaten a half a length, but a super win for Rebecca's yard, winning a listed contest, 18-1 chance. Hopefully a few of them were on in the stable. But I think it is about getting big winners, get the publicity, get people talking about you, because that does open the door to bringing in new owners.
And Mark, I think there's a target been mentioned at Newbury next month for this winner, Fonzarelli in a Mayor's final. Obviously well handicapped, or she was, considering she's able to win this, having been rated 109, and the runner-up was 134, I think.
Yeah, I mean, some bit of placing. I mean, it looked ambitious going in there, of 109. I know she won well at Newcastle previously, but yeah, I didn't see this coming personally. And you'd have to point to the step up and trip as a factor in improvement as well. Has been running over kind of 2-1 up to 2.5, and now gets up to an extended 3 and career best clearly. So nice bit of place, and this would be a lovely opportunity if you had wanted to try and get Blacktip in that race next year. I'm sure plenty of trainers will be thinking that.
Very good. Well, we'll just have a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking about the racing from Newbury and then throwing forward to what's coming this weekend and next week at Cheltenham.
The Racing Postcast is supported by Racing Post Members Club. Featuring award-winning journalism, expert tips and renowned form study tools, this is the only racing subscription you need to stay ahead of the field. If you're a new customer, you can use the code POST22, that's POST22, to get 50% off your first 3 months of Members Club Ultimate. That works out at just £17.48 per month to unlock all of the premium features, and it renews at full price thereafter. head to racingpost.com/postcast for all of the details and to claim.
Okay, and so then we also had some decent quality races at Newbury on Saturday, including the Greatwood Gold Cup that always used to be the feature contest on this Saturday. Both these handicap chases that started Saturday's card in the end sort of dominated from the front by horses that just kind of took over and could not be reeled in, Mark. Paint the Dream won by 15 lengths at 8-1. Did you see that coming after his slightly disappointing effort at Weatherby the time before?
Well, certainly not. My God, he absolutely ran riot, didn't he? It was 15 and it could have been more. And he had them in trouble from such a long way out. He's got a bit of quality about him. And, you know, off this sort of handicap territory, fair enough. I know it was the same mark as his last win. He struggled then when he went back up to higher weights. But, geez, he absolutely ran riot. I mean, he just looked in rude health with himself. That test of kind of 2.5 miles soft ground, that just looks to be his optimum. I know he gets a little bit farther. He won over a little bit farther at Newbury previously last season. But that's them sort of conditions when he's in around anything, the 150 territory. I assume he's going to be a little bit higher than 147 the next day he turns up. But he really, really, it was a joy to see a horse like that just taken to his racing so well. Tamarok de Matan, for all that he was beaten pretty well in second, I take some encouragement from his effort. You know, Paul Nicholls' horses, they're coming back. You know, I think he's 26% strike rate in the last fortnight. This horse now, you know, the way Harry Coblin was, it was a tough task for him to time when he'd make his challenge because the winner was so far clear. But I didn't think he finished like a necessarily tired horse. Now, he was never going to beat the winner. But I doubt they're going to go overboard looking at his performance in the race. And just could be one of a different set of circumstances he could show up well. Maybe he would have sights lowered slightly. Thought he ran well. And I give a mention to Kildysert as well. I know he was well beaten, but he did stay on. And if you're looking towards kind of nationally trials, thought that was reasonably solid. 10-year-old, I know he's missed a bit of time, but for a first run, 462 days, I think connections will be more than pleased with what they saw there.
Yeah, I must say, I thought that was about the best that you could hope for from Kildysert, really, in the circumstances. He hadn't run since the Ladbrokes Trophy from the year before last. And you have to be saying, the stable isn't running riot at the moment. They've gone a little bit quiet for the time being. So, you know, you can just see him being interesting again for the Grand National. I think he's got back down to the rating that he had when he won over the Mildmay fences there a few years back, and still only 10. Kildysert, he's interesting. But Leon, I mean, this Greatwood Gold Cup, I mean, this is the kind of race that explains why we've got wealthy bookmakers, isn't it? I mean, you've got 9-2 joint favourites both beaten, a couple of 5-1 shots unplaced. The winner was last the time before. I mean, goodness me, what chance have the punters got?
It's well, look, he was last, I suppose, 4 out of 4. But as Mark said, he'd good form at Newbury back at the back end of 2020. Probably had his optimum conditions. But the way he won, I don't think anybody saw that. I mean, to win that easy, it was mightily impressive. But I do take your point about Kildysert. It was a decent run. And look, he could come into the national picture. I mean, look, it wasn't all that long ago, 2 years ago, like when he was second in the Ultimate. He was only beaten a neck. So there's no doubt that Kildysert has got a bit of class about him. And I'm sure Connections would have been pleased with that run. But the winner, look, hopefully Connections knew, because, I mean, that was a performance of a lifetime. That was his best performance by some way, and he's absolutely bolted up.
Chaps, this seems a good moment to ask for your thoughts about the subject of trainer form, because Farinay was in this race, sent off 9-2 joint favourite, trained by Venetia Williams, who has acknowledged recently that she sort of, after a really good run through the early part of the year, she'd been sort of grappling with a bug in the yard, and you know, you can't always anticipate which horses it's affecting until they run. He ran no race at all, dropped out very tamely and made you think, gosh, this is a serious problem. Then our next two runners, of course, both gone and won. When we're coming up to a major week like the festival, you know, it'd be so helpful to know who's on the top of their game and who isn't. But, of course, some of these yards are just not running their quality horses. They're being saved for the big days. I'm thinking of Nicky Henderson, who's gone a couple of weeks since his last winner. But I mean,
he's just not running horses that have really obvious chances. Mark, would something like that bother you ahead of the festival?
Nicky's form doesn't particularly bother me because he hit the nail on the head there with the quality of animal he's running at the moment. And I think previously we had ground a little bit softer maybe than some of his would prefer. So I'm not panicked about that necessarily. You know, in general terms, when you talk about trainer form, of course you would have been very conscious about backing Paul Nicholls' horse when he was going poorly there. Like a lot of the time, I kind of wonder whether is there an element of just chance in some of these things, you know, that ultimately when horses are right, I think, look at Henry de Bromhead last year at Cheltenham, everything just seemed to click. And you also combine with that Rachel Blackmore was in outstanding form as a rider. Every decision she made was the correct one. When she had the choice to go left or right, she picked it correctly. You get confidence from winners. I'm not someone that would necessarily be, knocking a horse out of the equation for poor or excellent trainer form. But you would if it was a 50-50 split between horses and you had to bear in mind whether one trainer was going particularly well or not. It is a factor. It's an element, but not the biggest element to me. And just these things can be short term as well. Like you look at Gavin Cromwell, he was 1 for 49 in the 3 weeks previous to this weekend. And then he bangs in 4 winners at 2 meetings. You know, you just look at that and you wonder, are things just beginning to turn a corner at the right time of year for these guys? You know, I'm unaware of what would happen with Gavin or whether there was anything amiss in terms of, you know, horses with snotty nose. Certain, I have no insight whatsoever. But, you know, obviously we have flu jabs. It's well documented with trainers. They have to account for that in certain respects. So overall, I wouldn't have it as a massive factor. But to see a yard like maybe Gavin Cromwell's just firing in a few winners, it would give you reassurance if you were a supporter of a Flooring Porter or a Vanillier, etc. next week.
Leon, where would the subject of trainer form rank for you in order of importance when you're trying to work out a race?
I think Mark probably hit the nail on the head there. If it's a 50-50 choice where you've got two horses that you've identified as ones that you like in a particular race, you might be swayed by a trainer that's in better form than another. There is certain trainers, you've mentioned Nicky Henderson, Chris, that wouldn't bother me in the slightest about him not having a winner in the last couple of weeks because we all know how good he is at getting them ready for Cheltenham. I think some of the bigger names probably, like, you've got to look at the calibre of horse that they're actually running in the build-up to these big, big festivals and probably take it on that if they're not some of the stable stars, don't really look too much into it. But certainly if you were stuck between a rock and a hard place with two horses in the same race, I think I would be swayed towards a trainer that has a little bit of better form going into that particular race. But overall, the big names, they tend to always get it right for the big day.
Very good. And so we did have a veterans chase earlier in the Newbury card. Indy 5 dotted up by 9 lengths for David Dennis and Stan Shepherd. Mark, it's fun to see these veterans races, but the form isn't necessarily going to be very influential over the next month or two, I suppose.
No, likewise, we had another veterans chase at Navan at the weekend as well. It's up at East to finish. We don't have so many of them over here in Ireland, but they're enjoyable races. Whether I like one at the Cheltenham Festival now, don't get me started on that. I wouldn't be overly keen to introduce it. I think we have far too many races as it is. But overall, the performance of the winner, you could call the winner from a fair way out. Travelled really, really nicely. If you'd the run of Cotto Rico, he got out of his ground pretty early, 9-4 favourite. He's better than that suggests. When he's good, he's good. When he has an off day, he's... I'm not trying to put him in Metier category now, but, you know, he has a bit of class about him. I prefer him to be fresh as well. He's got a decent record fresh, so wouldn't be totally disappointed if they wanted to freshen him up and bring him back for a crack at something later in the season. But overall, the winner, you could have called him the winner from a fair way out.
Definitely. Yes, let's not talk about a veterans race at Cheltenham Festival. You'd be lifting horses straight out of the Gold Cup and the Ultima and the Kim Muir, wouldn't you? Just cannibalising your existing races. Leon, I'm guessing this was probably a quiet race for Boyle Sports.
Yeah, it was. But you know what? Indy 5, he might go back there again next month because he certainly liked Newbury. He's won there in the past, jumped a little bit right, but still won by 9 lengths. So if he does go back, I think they have a similar race next month at Newbury. If he did go back, he'd certainly be one that you'd be keeping an eye on. Although He was very, very good over the weekend. But yeah, I'd be in total agreement. We don't need a veterans chase at the Cheltenham Festival.
Very good. So let's think then about what we do need to be doing for specifically next week's Cheltenham Festival. Leon, I'm presuming that the betting is getting pretty hot these days. What's been happening lately in your markets?
Yeah, look, I mean, there's obviously been a lot of talk about the Supreme. It looks to be one of the races of the season, but probably the money in the last couple of days would suggest, I mean, I don't know this. I mean, I don't think anyone knows this bar the man himself, but it would suggest that Sir Gerhard is going to step up to the Ballymore and Dysart Dynamo is going to stay in the Supreme, Kilcrute. There's been an awful lot of money around for him over the past probably week. He's now into a 6-1 chance. Willie Mullins is on record as saying that he's really pleased with him. He's in the best position that he's been all season. He, of course, ran a blinder at Cheltenham last year. So the same could be said, really, about Galopin Deschamps, that the comments from Willie Mullins would suggest that he's going to stay, well, actually drop back in trip and go for the Turners instead of stepping up in trip and going for the Brown Advisory. State Man, there's another one of Willie Mullins. He's been backed for the county hurdle. He's now into 4-1 from 6-1. And Adamantly Chosen is now 6-1 from 10-1 for the Martin Pipe. So, look, we're non-runner, obviously, no bet, all races. So it does give kind of punters that assurance that if they back something, Chris, and it doesn't run, you will get your money back. But look, a lot's going to happen between now and next Tuesday. Fingers crossed, as a racing fan, first and foremost, that all these big names get there, because it's always in the last kind of couple of days we hear a couple of horses that kind of go by the wayside. Energamine, of course, there was a lot of kind of people quite worried in terms of Energamine with the stone bruise. All the reports are that he's fine. But you would be a little bit worried, not worried, but Willie Mullins has said that he'd probably go with Jacqueline Pursois if he had to choose between the two of them. It's going to be another fascinating race, the Queen Mother Champion Chase. It really, it's mouthwatering. It really is. So you're just, again, you're keeping fingers and toes crossed that all these big horses get there on the day, because this is what we love about these festivals. We see the best sometimes take on the best, because we've got so many races now. Unfortunately, we don't get always the best taken on the best because there's so many options.
Well, that is an issue. But I tell you what's puzzling me about these betting markets right at this moment, and we'll take the Boyle Sports prices as an example. Galopin Deschamps, you've got him 11-10 for the Turners, which is where Willie Mullins says he's going, taking on Bob Olinger, which is obviously going to be a tough task for any animal. For the Festival Novices Chase, which is, I think, sponsored by Brown Advisory, you got him 5-4 on. You've got him odds on for a race, even though, you know, he's not expected to go there. Boyle Sports' message to Willie Mullins clearly is he would have a better winning chance in the longer race, wouldn't he?
Well, I don't think we need to tell Willie Mullins anything, Chris. He's well capable himself of making decisions. That's why he's a genius of a trainer. It's just in terms of the money that we've had for him at the moment, there would be a little bit more towards the Brown Advisory than there is towards the Turners. Now, Willie has said he's leaning towards the Turners. That doesn't mean he's going to the Turners. And we've been following this game long enough, both you, Mark, and I. Willie Mullins can change his mind at the very, very last minute, which he's entitled to, because he will make the decision based upon his expertise, the team and Close Sutton. They all come together. The final decision is Willie's. But certainly, if he changes his mind at the last second, it's his decision. And he's the one who's tasked with bringing these horses to Cheltenham to give them the best chance of winning a race.
I get that completely. Mark, you're the trainer of Galopin Deschamps. What race are you putting him in?
I've been an advocate for the Turners for him for quite a long time, back from when he first crossed the line at Leopardstown, when I was hearing talk of him stepping up in Trip, I really didn't like the sound of it. You look at Alaho a couple of years ago in the, was in the RSA, a horse that just looked to me to have a very, very high cruise speed for 2.5. They said him up to 3 in the RSA, and he ends up getting outstayed in a Gruder against Manila Indo and Champ. And that is a scenario that I could see happening in a high senior world in this year's Brown Advisor if he did go that direction, even though I have no doubt in my mind the Gallop and the Champ is the best horse. You know, the only reason he stayed 73 miles for the Punchestown Festival Grade 1 he won was because Willie Mullins is trying to split his aces in different directions. He had Gyre de Menil for the 2.5. He had Echoes and Rain and Blue Lore for the 2 mile. You know, he was just splitting horses up as best he could. And Ruby Walsh has been on the record of saying that they never really viewed him as an out-and-out 3-miler. Albeit Willie said after he won at Christmas, I think that when you get this fella up to 3 mile plus, he'd be pretty smart. It's the obvious race for me. He jumps really well. I know last time he took a guess at 1 or 2, but it was a sort of performance I thought that he'd learn an awful lot from. And you know, if there are any flaws in Bob Alder's jumping, which I think is a factor that's probably been overplayed. You know, if Henry de Bramme hadn't said that, you know, this horse had taken extra schooling, and you know, I think that he's probably under the microscope a little bit more by virtue of his profile. I thought he was fine last time. I wouldn't be overly skeptical about what he can deliver in a jumping sense. But Gallop and Deschamps, to me, just could be the superior animal. It's just so exciting if we do get the chance to see them both there. I really hope he goes to the Turners.
It would be a heck of a race, wouldn't it? But also, it feels a bit like charity being offered by Ireland towards Britain. You know, we did only win 5 races at the festival last year. And, you know, because Gallop and Deschamps is going for the shorter race, that leaves Brave Man's Game and A Hoist in Your sort of seemingly in the driving seat for the 3-miler.
Don't worry, Capodanno will look after it for us. Don't be under any illusions, Chris.
We're not even going to win that race, is that what you're saying?
I really like him. I think he's got a right squeak in it. Probably go under the radar a little bit. I know his shoulder, I think, might have been a little bit sore. Willie mentioned in his press morning following the fall in the same race that Gallop and Deschamps won at the Dublin Racing Festival. But, God, he's got an awful lot of class. I really, really think he'll serve up to them there. You know, how many horses do you think could have done what he did with Bob Ollinger at Punchestown last time and going toe to toe with him for an awful long way? I don't know if A Brave Man's Game would have done that. I think Capodanno's overpriced in that market.
I did watch that race and thought, you know, there's an interesting horse for the future. Honestly, if I was betting now, I'd be a tiny bit disappointed about the odds on offer. But you just harping on that subject, Britain versus Ireland, I know some people think it's overplayed, but it's become more important, hasn't it? Because now it's taken as a sort of way of measuring the relative health of jump racing in these two countries. Britain took an absolute shellacking last year, and there's been an awful lot of navel gazing in consequence. Leon, what would you expect from the home team this time? Are we going to get a better showing?
I think maybe you'll get more than 5, yes. And to your point, if Gallopin takes on Bob, certainly, then you are taking away a huge chance of maybe Ireland. I mean, I agree with Marcus saying about Capodanno. He's a 6-1 chance now. I mean, he will give Brave Man's Game and A Hoist in Your plenty to think about. However, I think if Gallop and Deschamps was in that race, he'd give them more to think about. But I think Ireland will still comfortably win in terms of the 28 races. I would still be looking at 18 or more, maybe even 20 or more. I just think the strength and depth at the minute definitely plays towards Ireland over England. But look, I think for competition, you need both sides having good festivals. No one really wants to see a 23-5 scoreline because it doesn't do much for the rivalry. I mean, look, it's built up every year. Who's going to win? Is it going to be Ireland or is it going to be Great Britain? But I think Ireland will win and win comfortably, but you'd be hoping from a home perspective that they can certainly improve upon the 5 winners from last year, which I think they will. I'd be giving them something in and around the 7-9 bracket.
Mark, I'll come to you in just a second. I mean, I don't want to give the impression that I'm in the least bit jingoistic about this. And, you know, like almost any other punter, I don't really care where the winner is trained as long as I backed it. What would you be expecting to see next week, Mark?
think, look, Ireland should win the Prestbury Cup. That's their 1-10 shot. It'd be a shock if it was anything else other than that. In terms of a number of winners, I don't think we'd have as many winners as last year. And I think the handicap chases might go Britain's way. Maybe not in the Kim Muir, because Frontal Assault in there is, he looks very, very solid. But other than that, you know, I think in Celeb Delaine, particularly in the plate, there's a good few there. Just that I think you've got better depth there. And also the handicapper, the average ratings differential between the Irish marks and the British marks for handicap chasers this time around, it was crunching the numbers on this for most of Tuesday last week, but like it was 1.3 pounds was the differential between the handicap chaser. So an average Irish horse was 1.3 pounds higher over fences in Britain than Ireland at the festival in 2018. That jumped up to 2.4 last year and in that period in between. It's now up to 3.8. And even at that, there's races like the Ultima, which, you know, typically Britain would have a decent hand on. You know, I just think in general, that might be a division that gives you a good foothold to build a better scoreline than last year. And then you throw in as well, for all that I'd love to see Shacken win the champion chase, Shishkin is going to be tough to beat in there. You know, if just actually on the point of kind of Britain and Ireland, not to be doing your job, Leon, plugging prices, but there's a market there at Boysports, 1-2-3, an Irish train 1-2-3 in the Gold Cup. 9-4, I think, is very, very generous. Like, I mean, what do Britain have for the Gold Cup? You have Chantry House, who was unimpressive in beating Santini. You have Protectorat there, who is a bit of an unknown factor, but does need to produce a career best, really, to trouble an Aputard, in my view. And, you know, then you're really going down the pecking order further again, you know, hoping for soft ground for Royal Pagai. Like, you have Galvin for Ireland, you have Aputard, you have Manella Indo, you have Album Photo, who showed a bit more, reportedly, at the weekend at Navan than he had in his previous work. I think an Irish train 1-2-3 in the Gold Cup, however, kind of, it's going to pinch yourself when you say that as an Irish person, I find, considering where we've come from. But in strictly betting terms, I think that's decent value. I quite like the look of that.
Leon, I tell you something I've been harping on about lately is the number of odds on shots we've been getting at recent festivals. It definitely happens more often than it used to, up until about, I think, 2009. You hardly ever had a festival where there was more than one odds on shot. But now we're sort of averaging five a year. How do you think punters respond to that? I mean, it's not as though they're all winning, never mind winning easily. Does it make these races any less attractive to betting people?
I think when you have more odds on shots, Chris, you will get punters going doubles, trebles, accumulators. Look, there's been plenty of stories of guys being let down by one leg, whether they picked four or five or whatever that may be. But it's probably the nature of the kind of, especially from an Irish bookmaking perspective, the dominance of some of the Irish horses in what they're doing at the moment. I don't think punters really lose interest in it because it might be a shade of odds on or not. I think if they like the horse and like, they're convinced that it's going to win, they're still going to back it. It does lend people to maybe looking for a bit of each way value, a little bit more maybe than they probably would have done in the past, where a horse now, even if you look at Galloping Deschamps, okay, he's 5-4 on, maybe in the past with his two performances so far, he might have been an 11-8, maybe 6-4 chance if there was kind of more competition around. But I still think if you really fancy one, and he's a shade of odds on, it's not really going to deter you from having your bet. You might look for a bit of each way value, but I think if you're a serious punter, which you do tend to get at Cheltenham, the price is not really going to be the number one factor. It's about form, it's about trainer, and it's about what you believe in terms of what this horse can achieve on the day.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I do try to be a price sensitive punter myself, but I mean, at the end of the day, it's the most compelling week's horse racing in the year, and everybody wants to back a winner, don't they, to some extent. Tell me, here's something that punters like to think about. You know, what is it that would have to happen next week to make the whole thing an absolute disaster for Boyle Sports? I mean, you could imagine in your head, what are the results which is going to have you on the Saturday morning going, oh my goodness, I don't want to talk to the chief executive after this?
Well, I suppose, look, if you get a lot of those favourites winning when they're all kind of put together in accumulators and in different types of bets, that's That's the number one thing I think every bookmaker going into Cheltenham, every one of us is fearful of favourites being lumped in together. That is the big fear. We have been quite lucky over the years where one will normally come to our rescue. But there is a couple of horses, maybe even on their own, the likes of Gaelic Warrior in the Boodles, Alaho in the Ryanair. You look at Death Duty in the Ultima, and maybe Winter Fog in the Pretemps. If I was just given a couple of horses on their own, they'd be ones that we would be quite fearful if they were to win. But it is that lumping together of favourites, because a lot of people do tend to put them together over the week, and whether it's 20 quid or 50 quid, or if you've saved up a few quid, you might even go 100 quid on an accumulator. They're the results that kind of strike fear into us, because if everyone is doing them, which does tend to happen with a lot of these favourites, a lot of people just put them in together because A, their form, B, who they're trained for, or by, excuse me. So they're the ones that we would be kind of keeping our eyes on, because the multiples, the liabilities start to grow and grow and grow as the week goes on, especially if the favourites start to oblige.
Yes, fair enough. Well, there's always one to save the bookies in there. We all remember poor old Annie Power at the last, and Benny DiGio at the last come to that. Leon, Mark, I'm going to come to you in a second, but Leon, is there one, just speaking as a punter, forgetting for the moment your connection with the bookmaking industry, is there a horse for next week that you would be most interested in backing at this stage, say you hadn't got any interest involved already?
I suppose there's a horse that's really always been, I mean, he's been talked about as probably they're a little bit disappointed maybe in terms of what he's actually produced. But I think a horse of Gordon Elliott's. Now, I know he's got the favourite in the race, isn't it, Buddy Rich? But Andy Dufresne, I think in the Grand Annual at around about 12 to 1, he'd be a little squeak each way. I like trying to pick out something that I think, even though, I mean, the handicapper hasn't missed him, but I do still believe that he's a class animal, and I think it's the right trip, and I think he would have a squeak in that particular race.
Mark, same question to you. What's the solid gold opportunity that's presenting itself to you at the moment from next week's racing?
Jesus, solid gold. I don't know. I think if you offered me one at a price, I think Magic Days is still a little bit overpriced in the Arkle. I don't think it's a fantastic Arkle. Edward Stone is solid without being spectacular. I think we saw last time at Blue Lord that he is far from bomb-proof. And just this mare last year, when I stepped away from Cheltenham, and if you asked me the one eye catcher of the whole meeting, I nearly would have said her in the mare's novice and third, or when she was second, telling me something, girl. The way that she raced out in front with such enthusiasm, or on the front end at least, with such enthusiasm, really inefficiently, and still finishing second to a mare that had pretty much the whole lot go right for her. And she wouldn't have beaten Tell Me Something Girl the way it panned out, but she looked like a mare of serious promise. She'd every right to fall in the hole in that day, and she just didn't. And she just looked over the top at Punchestown next time. But she won like a very, very smart sort of Cork over an extended two. And reportedly she was sore after coming out of her last start against Concertista, you know, right up there for favouritism for the mare's chase. In an Arkle that isn't spectacular, which Henry de Bromhead, who we've seen already win the Arkle with a mare and put the kettle on, I'd argue this doesn't even look as strong an Arkle as the one that put the kettle on won. I think this is a mare of similar ability, for all that put the kettle on has achieved a whole lot more. So I think at around 12 or 14 to 1, Magic Days is a real live one each way in the Arkle. That'll be where I'd be going.
Oh, interesting you say that, because, you know, I was doing this study of odds on favourites at the festival. What's interesting about the Arkle is that there's been seven odds on favourites in the last decade, and they've all won. But when you don't get an odds on favourite in the Arkle, you can get a complete boil over, like Western Warhorse, put the kettle on.
Oh, don't mention it. You'll have people turning off this podcast and they hear them two words mentioned.
Some old scars being reopened there. Oh. But I mean, Magic Days is right in that kind of description of a horse who's just not even really been taken seriously enough to this point. And as a consequence, the, you know, 12 to 1 with Boyle Sports is bigger maybe than it should be.
Here's open.
Very good. All right. Well, we still got plenty of racing to come over the next few days before we get to the Cheltenham Festival. Gents, I'm hoping that you've each got a best bet for the week for me, starting with you, Leon.
This will not be beaten.
Yeah, look, Leinster National, Sunday, score more, £3 higher than when he won it last year. He's had a nice couple of runs over hurdles. I'll give him a chance of winning back-to-back Leinster Nationals.
All right. And Mark, how are we going to make some money before we get to Cheltenham?
I think Mullenbeg, I was thinking she had an each way squeak in the champion bumper at Cheltenham. And I don't think she beat American Mike or Fasa Vega. I thought she could be one to potentially sneak into third or something like that. But connections are very much opening the door to have a go at Sandown instead on Saturday for that mare's bumper, the listed mare's bumper at 3 o'clock. I thought the way she won at Cheltenham last time, if she has the potential, I think, to go well and show a bit of promise in a champion bumper, she should nearly be winning this. Willie Mullins is a few entered up in it. Astro Diamond wasn't beaten far in a DRF grade two bumper last time, but I'm not so sure about the overall strength of that form, to be perfectly honest. I think there will be better races to emerge, maybe punches down and things like that. I wouldn't have it. For all that it's a grade two mare's bumper and we don't have a lot of that at home, it looked a real, real test the way it all worked out. And I think Mullenbeg just has a little bit of class about her. And for a stable enjoying a sensational year, she'll do for me in the 3 o'clock on Saturday at Sandown.
Very good. The one I'm looking at myself, this is a complete antidote to the richness of the Cheltenham Festival, is a horse called Ballybreen, who I think must be the last horse left in Evan Williams' yard that hasn't won this season. But, you know, on behalf of connections, I was so frustrated when he unseated four from home at Chepstow the last day. He's doing his usual thing of plugging on desperate going. And, you know, maybe it would have been too much of an ask for him to actually get up and win that race. But he was threatening to keep on going in a way that the others around him were struggling to do. He's got three entries for Friday. And I would guess that Evans may be looking for the worst of the ground, which he might get at Exeter in the 4:40 on Friday. Ballybreen taking on 3 miles. There's going to be a fair bit of rain in the forecast, I think, for the Exeter area between now and then. So hopefully that will all show up and maybe Ballybreen can break his duck for the season. That's a 9-year-old rated, I think, 97. That's the kind of quality of horse I like to get involved with. And of course, also this weekend, it's going to be the Imperial Cup Day at Sandown. That's a race that really hasn't taken on much of an identity yet. We're still waiting to see who the leading contenders for that are going to be. But when we eventually get some declarations closer to the time, there'll be plenty of betting interest in that card as well. Many thanks to my guest today. That's Leon Blanche from Boyle Sports and Mark Boylan of the Racing Post. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of the Racing Post postcast. And whatever you do in your interest in the racing over the next 10 days or so, do please bet responsibly. And hopefully we can all be lucky and get together after the festival and talk about how much money we've made. Thanks so much for listening.
The postcast brought to you by Boyle Sports. Best odds guaranteed, available the day before racing on singles, multiples, online and in shop. Time to switch? Boyle Sports. This is betting.